morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. The deputy public service chairperson is also with the commissioner. And your entourage, good morning. We are going to start with the meeting, and then now we're correcting. We had to actually wait for members to correct, because today it requires that we correct prior to starting the meeting. And other days we can wait for them to join us in the meeting. But we really appreciate that all of you are all here, and the Public Service Commission is here as well, and we can be able to commence with our business of the day. And just some quick administrative issues. I will just take us through some apologies after I've just reminded us on the agenda and the purpose of the meeting. Today we've got the consideration of the committee's draft DRR report as the first item that you have to go through as a committee. It's an item that has been, that started in three meetings. It is in two other meetings. This is our third meeting into that item. The continuation. The second item on the agenda is a briefing by the Public Service Commission on the Public Service Commission's report tabled in Parliament. The third item on the agenda is going to be the evaluation by the Public Service Commission on the implementation of Section 195 by the entities reporting to the Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration. So those are those that are related to us, like CITA, Parliament. So this is what we'll be doing for today. Welcome, Deputy Minister. We just started now. We were just on the first item. We'll go through the apologies that had been sent. The very first apology is from the Minister, Richard Baloyi. The Minister is still finalizing some discussions. And on this apology, it's indicated that he is attending an anti-corruption conference in the DRC, which he indicated that he's been attending this past days and will be coming back today later. And then the next apology is Honorable Williams, who is on the oversight visit here, because members don't belong to only one committee. He's in another committee. It will be COCTA in this case, where he's there embarking on oversight. The other apology is Honorable Bushiko. Honorable Bushiko, they have a bereavement at home. She had to leave yesterday. They are preparing for the funeral, which will take place over this weekend. She might start to come back by next week after the funeral. Honorable members, prior we start with the meeting, I thought it's important just to go through our program so that we remind ourselves in the coming weeks. We will discuss about this at the end of the meeting. But as I've already outlined, what is the purpose of the meeting today? As outlined on our program, the last program, which is the 27th today, we've got the consideration of the committee's draft, the briefing by Public Service Commission on the state of the Public Service Report, evaluation by Public Service Commission on the Constitution and on the entities that relate to us, as outlined in the agenda for today. This is our meeting for the 27th. It is important for us to just know what we'll be doing next week so that everyone who has to prepare knows exactly what to do. We do have a meeting in preparation to our anti-corruption program. So the meeting, as is outlined on the agenda, it says discussion with various stakeholders on anti-corruption. Here we'll be having the Minister in the Presidency for Monitoring and Evaluation, the Minister of Public Service and Administration, the Public Service Commission as well. So it should always be here, the Public Service Commission, like a twin brother or twin sister, I don't know. So, yeah, it can be either. A twin doesn't have to be specific in terms of gender. But what is going to happen, we regard this meeting of next week as the preparatory meeting that will have an impact on the 17th, where we've got all the cluster, all the committees in Parliament that will be part of the meeting. So in other words, on prior to this meeting, it's important for us as members to have input in terms of our envisaged way of operating. But we'll be collating what government has been doing, what parliament has been doing, and we believe next week's meeting is a preparatory and a planning meeting in terms of how we want to deal with anti-corruption on the oversight as parliament. So it's the first meeting that will be preceded by the 17th, and we want to believe the 17th we must have a better impact from the side of oversight. So we just outlined this so that the department prepares itself. We have already issued invitations. I'm sure, I don't know, Public Service Commission, have you already received the invitation? Thank you. Public Service have, and I'm sure the departments that are here have already received that invitation. But also we'll appreciate if members send issues and inputs in advance in terms of the approach and how we want to work on this. We can't, if it's possible, organize a prior meeting as members only, perhaps prior the original meeting, maybe on Monday, if it's possible, and if we're able to, where we can just sit down and say, based on the invitation on what is coming, we also think as Parliament it would be best for us to approach things in this manner. So on the 10th, it is the meeting we talked about, where it will be a joint meeting with Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training, where we'll be having a briefing by Minister for Higher Education and Training and Minister for Public Service and Administration on the Human Resource Plan and Human Resource Strategy of the Public Service. We haven't confirmed the set with the Portfolio Committee. Have they confirmed that they will be part of the meeting? It's a process that we're still working on. We have started it, but it's not as yet confirmed. We will notify the meeting next week if the approach would still be the same, if everyone else is available, the manner in which we're trying to arrange it. The last meeting, no, it's not the last. The 17th meeting I've already talked about. It's a cluster meeting where we did it actually talks of the overlap on anti-corruption and the approach that Parliament in this role of oversight has to take. And therefore, it therefore requires this committee to be very ready to actually coordinate that process. We have discussed with the Chair of Chairs, and the Chair of Chairs might be part of facilitating this meeting. Cool. Okay. On the 24th of November, we have a briefing by the Minister of Public Service and Administration on the Public Service Management Bill. That will be the first briefing. So that draft legislation is anticipated to be tabled in Parliament during the month that is identified, that is November. So that will be the first discussion with the committee. That will be the first appearance of the department in terms of the Public Service Management Bill. Okay. that is how far the program is on November. We already have actually sat down and requested some research work to be done, and we will circulate that information. We're just going to have a meeting after this to see the information, and we'll circulate it to members. I'm sure that work has been done. Yes. I think we'll be guided. We'll see what is coming so that when we engage. If those are available, we can have maybe a meeting prior to that ourselves, just the committee only, that can help us just to give direction and all moving in understanding this is the approach we're actually taking. Thank you. But we'll circulate the information by tomorrow, if today or tomorrow, today later. Tomorrow, no? Okay. Honourable members, that's where we are. I think if I'm allowed, we can start with the first item. On the first item, it is the budget review and recommendation report of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration on the budget vote 11 for 2010. Okay.
Madam Chair, I've got a proposal that seeing we're going to have briefings by the Public Service Commission, and they're here, whether we shouldn't exchange the two items, so we first hear them, and then when they've done, they can go, and then we can, as a committee, discuss our internal affairs.
I don't think it's a problem. I hope it's fine, members. Should we accept it and proceed? Yeah, I think we can proceed that way, Honorable Dreyer. In the light of the proposal, we can then start with the second item on the agenda. And we are taking the first item to be the last item. And then, yeah, now we will request the leader of the delegation to introduce members of the delegation from Public Service Commission. We're very familiar with most, but it's important to just do those formal introductions from time to time. And we appreciate today we have the deputy chairperson. We'll focus on the item on the report table in Parliament at this point in time. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, good morning. And thank you all for, again, creating the space for the Public Service Commission to interact with the committee today. My name is Pelele Tengeni. I am the Deputy Chairperson, as the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee has already indicated, Deputy Chairperson of the PSC. While I'm introducing myself, I just want to register the Chairperson's apology. He would have loved to be with us here today, but he has commitments in the legislature in Gauteng. With your permission, Chairperson, I would like to hand over to the DG to do the introductions, and I'll just do a brief remark when he's done.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. The team that is here with us today, I will start from my extreme right, next to the Deputy Chairperson. Nozipho Gwaza is the Parliamentary Officer of the Public Service Commission. Next to her is Fini Vivier. She is the Chief Director, Special Operations in the Public Service Commission. And on my immediate left, Mr. Indra Naidu, Deputy DG, responsible for monitoring and evaluation in the PSC. And next to him is Matari Mashau, who is the Acting Deputy DG, responsible for leadership and management practices. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Minister, my apologies, Deputy Minister. You were sitting on this side and you just were in my blind spot when you moved to this side of the room. I also want to... because I'm right-handed. Thank you. Just as a way of introducing the task of the Commission here today, I just would like, on behalf of the Commission in its entirety, to register again the appreciation of the Commission for the ever-maturing working relationship between the Public Service Commission and this body. The drive and the energy that you put behind the Commission is contributing quite a lot to the successes that the Commission can boast about. I also want to acknowledge this committee for the role that it has played in ensuring that the oversight business is cascaded to the levels of the provinces. This year, more than ever, we have seen quite a number of interactions. Previously, we were complaining about an unevenness that the reports of the Commission get taken up at national level, but when you get to the provinces, the picture becomes uneven at best and unsatisfactory at worst. But we've recorded, profound improvements this year in terms of engaging parliaments, legislatures at the provincial level with the Commission's report, and we thank you for your role in leading that process. Just on the reports that will be presented to you, on the inspection, the Commission has gone back, for example, to the South African Police Service with the inspections report, because we have a protocol that says within 30 days of conducting inspections, the report must be given back to the department, and the department must come back with feedback to the commission on how they are implementing the recommendations. That process has already happened. I think the department was very quick to return to the commission with feedback. But the monitoring and evaluation side, we have again to ask the members of the portfolio committee to note that the Public Service Commission has the expertise on M&E, but our resource constraints have kept us in a situation where we have to keep to the sampling approach, a selected number of departments every year, and we have not as yet, in terms of the stipulations in the Constitution. The Constitution says those 9 values and principles must apply to all spheres of government as well as to public entities. So far, the Commission has only been able to sample national as well as provincial departments. So that part where we must extend the M&E to local government as well as public entities is still very lacking, and we would appreciate the support of the Commission to get where we want to go with extending M&E. With those few words, I would now like to hand over to the DG and the team to proceed with the presentations. Thank you very much.
We will start with the, in terms of the order that appears in the invitation letter. There is 6 reports that we'll have there. The first 2 will be presented by Mr. Naidu, and followed by the next 3 by Matari, and the last one on financial misconduct by Fini. But we'll start with Indra now, Mr. Naidu, in terms of the consolidated report on inspections.
Thank you, DG. Honorable chairperson, honorable members. There's 2 reports that I will be presenting. The first is the consolidated report on inspections which we have conducted on service delivery sites, and the selection relates to the South African Police Service. This was done just before the 2010 event. So some of the events, some of the recommendations are focused on that, but a lot of them actually continue after the period because they still hold. There's 2 categories of inspections that we undertake, the announced and the unannounced. As far as the announced goes, we focused on the readiness of the SAPS and police stations to support the 2010 Soccer World Cup. And on your left-hand side in brown, you have the indicators, the performance indicators, and on the right-hand side, you have the results. The issues that we measured was the awareness that they had of the 2010 Soccer World Cup integrated strategy, and we found that in 80% of the sample police stations, there was an awareness of the existence of the strategy, which indicates there was good communication. The second element was the availability of dedicated division staff responsible for 2010 preparations in the police stations. And here it was found that in 50% of the sample police stations, there were dedicated divisions to deal with the matter. And I think now that the event is over and it was a successful event, shows that the strategy actually did work. The adequacy of personnel within the police stations to handle the World Cup was sampled, and we found that 80% of sample police stations did not have adequate personnel. So in other words, there was a whole question of a resource constraint at that level. And you know some of the discussions that, and the events that happened thereafter. And of course, the next element was the requirements of specific skills to deal with crime during the World Cup. 40% of sample police stations required skills such as crowd management and advanced crime prevention. So there was a deficit in that area as well. The element of communication, we looked at the availability of CCTV cameras in and around the police stations as well as the host cities, and 60% of the police stations had these cameras, but the cameras belonged to the local municipality, which posed a problem. We looked at the availability and adequacy of vehicles, and the finding was, and something that still holds, is that 90% of designated police stations did not have adequate vehicles in good working condition to handle demand for the 2010 event. And, of course, it's the situation that we are finding that continues to prevail. The availability of budget within police stations. All sampled police stations did not have a budget to specifically enable them to prepare for this event. So, in other words, they had to deal with this with the existing resources. There wasn't an additional fund availability. We looked at the issue of availability of interpreters within the stations to accommodate non-South African-speaking languages. And here it was found that 50% of sample police stations did not have interpreters in place, and 40% had plans to acquire interpreters. The second element is the whole question of unannounced inspections, the next leg of the methodology. And here we focused on the implementation and compliance of police stations with the Bartha-Pele framework. So as far as the work of the PSC goes, there's two frameworks that we look at. One are the 9 constitutional values and principles, which we call the 9 CVPs, and the other one are the 8 Bartha-Pele. So the 9 CVPs is related largely to the extent to which we meet the tenets of good governance, and Bartha-Pele is how do citizens actually see government. And from this regard, we went in unannounced and anonymous in terms of doing the following. We observed facilities, and we found that 86% of the sample police stations had acceptable outside signage, but 36% did not display business hours and a list of services rendered on their outside signage. We observed the access to information and found that 54% of police stations visited had service charters that were displayed. And in terms of staff observation, 90% of them, of frontline staff, were wearing tags, but 10% did not. We also spoke to staff, and in 78% of the sample police stations, staff raised a number of concerns that hampered preparation for the event, the main, of course, being budgetary constraints, while in 22% of the instances, staff were generally happy. We spoke to citizens, that's the people that were visiting this, the police station. In 60% of the police stations visited, citizens were not happy with waiting periods before they were assisted, while 40% were happy. And general observation is that 59% of the police stations visited had access to drinking water for the public. So this is what took place just before the event, but as you would know, it's a timing issue and the result can change. We make the set of recommendations both as far as announced and unannounced goes. In terms of the announced inspections, the relevant section of SAFS 2010 Soccer World Cup Integrated Strategy and Operational Plan should be discussed with officials at the designated police stations for the effective implementation thereof. We have monitored that, and that did take place. So that obviously led to the better performance. The national and provincial head office of SAFS should ensure that before 2010, all designated police stations have adequate personnel, vehicles, and other requirements required equipment which will be used to handle the demands of the 2010 event. And we found that many of these were put in place just before the event, hence the success of the event. So we have a clear case here of, based on an evaluation, feedback went, something was done, and that did lead to a successful event. In terms of the unannounced inspections, and this of course prevails, we are encouraging the police stations to display prior requirements that are needed before clients can access service, business hours, and a list of services rendered. Because quite often the citizens go there, they go back and forth because they don't have documentation. And it's just a waste of time, and it involves money, although it's difficult to do it for all the different types of cases. But most certainly at the front line, we have noticed a discernible improvement in the last few years. The SAPS national and provincial head office should assist police stations in developing service delivery charters. Once developed, these need to be translated into local languages and displayed where they are easily visible for members of the public. And we also have asked that a complaints registers and suggestion boxes should be displayed, and a complaint handling process should be visibly displayed. So, Chairperson and honourable members, what I've presented is the global picture of about 10 site visits and inspections in each province. So there are province-specific reports that went and were engaged with at that level between the Commission, the Parliament, the members at that level. And this is the summary report, which actually contains all the individual results as well. The next evaluation that I'll present is the one on the integration and coordination in the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program, what's referred to as the ISRDP. This is a program which was unique in that it does not have its own budget, except for a very small program staff. It was built on the idea of coordination of other programs. Its premise was that if existing programs in the districts are implemented in a coordinated and integrated manner, their combined effect will be bigger. This still largely applies to the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, and the lessons from the ISRDP study are therefore quite relevant. Now, the objective of the study was to evaluate the integration and coordination processes that were set in place in support of the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. Coordination mechanisms introduced by the ISRDP were overly simplistic. Now, to build a whole program intervention on an abstract notion of coordination and integration was ambitious in the first place, whereas the intervention mechanisms of other poverty reduction programs are concrete. In other words, you build a house, you transfer land, or you create a job. That of the ISRDP were abstract, and the implementers, we found, did not understand it. The interdepartmental task teams were not coordination or planning forums, but ended up as information sharing and reporting channels. So the actual coordination and integration didn't take place. There was no real planning decisions like approval of objectives, program, project, or budgets that were taken in these nodes. It therefore had limited influence as a coordination mechanism. Stakeholders found it difficult to understand the value added by the ISRDP. It was also seen to be a duplication of the integrated IGR and IDP processes within governments. The report argues that the devolution of development planning to the local government level is necessary, as is already happening with regard to housing and water services. In the absence of full devolution, and based on the belief that coordination should be facilitated by appropriately empowered local actors from both local government and the district level units of sector departments, the PSE recommends the following measures. National and provincial departments should increasingly create integrated units at the district level. Heads of such units should be empowered to, in cooperation with local government actors, develop district development plans. Policies and guidelines should be flexible enough to allow adjustment to local conditions and preferences. And budgets should, in addition to being broken down into programs and sub-programs and further subdivisions, also be split spatially, that is, according to district, so the local sector managers will know what the budgets can be committed to in terms of the district development plans. So that is a piece of work. We are currently, chairperson and honorable members, looking at the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, the CASP, and we'll complete an evaluation in the next few months, and that will actually build and talk about the issues here. I'll stop there, Mr. Chairperson.
Chairperson, honorable members, Deputy Minister, Deputy Chair of Public Service Commission, thank you. I'm going to present three reports, and the first one is on the assessment of the state of human resource management in the public service. The manner in which the public service manages its human resources is critical because this is one of the important vehicles that the government uses in order to deliver on its mandate. The public service has introduced a number of policies, HR policies, aimed at transforming the management of human resources to be strategic in its approach. And over the years, the Public Service Commission has conducted a number of studies aimed at ensuring that the policies that have been put in place actually address the needs of government. And during the studies, we have identified gaps and made recommendations on how these gaps should be addressed. And last year in November, the Public Service Commission published a report on the state of HR in the public service, which provided a more holistic assessment of HR. This was basically covering close to 30 reports that were done by the Public Service Commission. And we also looked at work that was done by other institutions, for instance, DPSA. The findings in the report that the Public Service Commission introduced are the following. In respect of the human resource organizational strategy and planning, the Public Service Commission was concerned about the inadequate organizational development skills and poor organizational design at departmental level. For instance, the development of organizational structures tend to focus on creation of posts and not the job function and purpose. In other words, you find that posts are created, but obviously if you have not ensured that the posts are going to be occupied by people who actually can perform that job function, you would miss the aim of the creation of the post. These weaknesses have led to departments not having proper structures that are supported by sufficient human resources. While provision has been made for delegations to accounting officers, such delegations are not always done. These are delegations from the Public Service Act and from the Public Service Regulations. And despite policies on affirmative action and employment equity being implemented, the employment of people with disabilities and integration of women in the workplace remain a challenge. If you look at the report of the Commission on the number of people with disabilities in employment in the public service, it was below the target that was set. It was supposed to be 2% by 2010, but I don't think we have reached that 2%. And in respect of women at SMS level, when we did a study, we found that it was at 35%, and I doubt that we have reached this at 50% that was supposed to be reached by 2009. In respect of the human resource practices, the Commission found that there was a disregard for elementary processes such as compiling job descriptions, conducting job evaluations, obtaining approval of the job adverts prior to the placement in the media, all of which undermine the credibility of the selection process and open the public service up for legal challenges. And the next item is the framework for the recruitment of scarce skills is in place, but the development and retention of priority skills remain a challenge. And this obviously affects service delivery in the critical areas, which I would mention later on when it comes to recommendations. Human resource utilization and development, the overall implementation of PMDS, that is a performance management and development system for senior management, members of the senior SMS, has also been found to be unsatisfactory. These weaknesses are also prevalent at the level of the heads of department. And the PSC has reported repeatedly in its fact sheets on the filing of the performance agreements of HODs year in, year out. And as at February this year, only 65% of the performance agreements of HODs who were supposed to file the performance agreements with the PSC were not filed. And as at 31st March, only 51% of qualifying HODs had been evaluated for the financial year 2008-2009. And obviously this figure might have changed because the period had closed 3 months later. On employee health and wellness, the Public Service Commission found that the EHW deals with the development and implementation of effective programs that are aimed at enhancing the quality of work life within departments. And the PSC also found that there was a lack of commitment from senior managers in implementing the employee wellness program. The progress made by GEMS in terms of the enrollment of public servants is encouraging. And in respect of employee relations, despite the fact that the Public Service Commission is highly unionized, and with the exception of 2007 and 2010 strikes, the public service has generally enjoyed a relative labor peace during the last few years. However, there is a need for us to honestly reflect on what led to the strike and how this can be handled in order to ensure that it doesn't recur. The other challenges regarding employee relations include management of discipline and grievance. And there are quite a number of reports that have been produced by the PSC in respect of this area, which explain in detail what the problems are. On human resources, organizational strategy and planning, what the PSC found is that the DPSA should conduct, sorry, these are recommendations in respect of all the areas that the state of HR looked at. And what the PSC recommends is that the DPSA should conduct a follow-up assessment to establish whether there has been an improvement on organizational design since the introduction of the guide and toolkit on organizational design. And also, the SMS members must be evaluated on whether they are meeting the employment equity targets in their components. This is because the SMS members are responsible sometimes with delegated powers to recruit employees. And in respect of the human resource practices, the recommendations are that the department should develop detailed and clear recruitment and selection policies. Job hopping should be restricted by introducing regulatory measures relating to promotion. And the recommendation on employee health and wellness, management should provide support by providing funding and staff to implement and maintain programs in respect of this area. And on employee relations, departments must improve the appropriateness and consistency of sanctions given in cases of misconduct. And this obviously is mentioned in detail in one of the reports that was produced by the PSC on the consistency of sanctions meted out. And that is the end of the presentation in respect of the state of human resource in the public service. The next report is on the effectiveness of public service leadership in the promotion of intergovernmental relations. I'll start off by mentioning that effective public service leadership plays a pivotal role in the promotion of intergovernmental relations. And in the absence of this effective leadership, government institutions are likely to continue working in silos, regardless of enabling frameworks that have been put in place to ensure that there is intergovernmental relation. The PSC decided to assess the role played by the public service leadership in promoting IGR in three spheres of government through planning and coordination of the development of the public transport infrastructure necessary for 2010 FIFA World Cup. This report was produced last year on time for the government to be able to improve where there was a need for improvement. And the findings of the PSC was that the critical role by public service leadership in effectiveness of IGR structures should be dealt with as follows. The PSC established, PSL established specific institutional arrangements which gave the necessary technical support to those already provided for in the IGR Framework Act. And this was seen in some of the provinces. For instance, in Eastern Cape, there was a technical team that was set up comprising of people at provincial level and also at local government. The creation of the structures enhanced the effective coordination and management of the overall preparations for the successful hosting of the FIFA World Cup. For example, the Transport Technical Committee, which I've mentioned, the Transport Coordinating Committee, Metro Transport Forums, and so forth. And this was enabled because there was this connection and communication continuously from the National Department of Transport up to the metro level. The elevation of important intergovernmental relations issues to appropriate levels of political decision-making, the PSC found that the public service leadership played a pivotal role in elevating the important IGR issues on public transport infrastructure development to appropriate political decision-making level. And further on, the PSC found that the assessment of the effectiveness of important IGR instruments was actually happening, and to ensure effective coordination of policy coordination between spheres of government, the IGR Framework Act requires that the implementation protocols be entered into by national and provincial and local governments. If the IPs are not developed, then in some instances the PSC found that there was an alternative that was used in the form of a memorandum of agreement. What we also found was that municipalities in particular knew very little about this IGR Framework Act. The next finding, the extent to which IGR funding instruments are effectively utilized, the PSC found that the Public Transport Infrastructure and System Fund was established to accelerate the pace of investment in public transport and non-motorized transport infrastructure in order to meet the transport requirements for the FIFA World Cup. It was found that senior managers played a critical role in securing approval and transfer of the necessary funds, and in some instances, senior managers had created an environment in which the approval and transfer of funds was quicker than expected. And the next finding is on the assessment of the effectiveness of accountability regimes created by the public service leadership in the promotion of IGR. The PSC found during the study that the public service leadership is hamstrung by the absence of appropriate accountability regimes between the national, provincial, and local government spheres. For example, at provincial level, it was found that the leadership did not have powers in respect of activities taking place at local government. These activities include the funds obtained by local municipalities from the National Department of Transport for purpose of developing public transport infrastructure necessary for the successful hosting of 2010 World Cup. Therefore, the absence of appropriate accountability regimes led to a situation where overall government machinery's ability to track progress and address challenges were severely compromised. And of all these findings, the PSC came up with the following recommendations: that the DPSA in COCTA must review the existing systems for managing and reporting on performance to better recognize and incentivize IGR collaboration. The current provision of SMS handbook should be revised to include the integrated governance in all performance agreements of HODs. Although this is so, it is not done adequately. And this we also see when we review the performance agreements that are filed with the PSC. Some of the HODs do not include this. DPSA and COFTA should ensure that proposals contained in the DPSA framework for managing joint programs are implemented to ensure effective collaboration and coordination by public service leadership in different spheres of government. The implementation of the proposals of the framework for joint program must be done by not later than July 2010. The public service leadership in the offices of the premiers, it is recommended, must be strengthened to ensure that there is sufficient capacity to monitor and support provincial departments and municipalities in the implementation of joint programs. The alignment of the planning framework should be accelerated to facilitate better intergovernmental cooperation in resourcing and delivery of critical services such as public transport infrastructure, sanitation, water, and electricity. And that is it in regard to the IGR report. The last report that I would present is on the implementation of the performance management and development system for senior managers in the province of Limpopo. And this is the latest report that the Public Service Commission has produced. Work around this area was done in four provinces previously. And given the central role played by the performance contracting on the ability of... okay. Given the central role played by the... Given the central role played by performance contracting on the ability of state missions to deliver services, the Department of Public Service and Administration introduced the Performance Management and Development System. This was for the members of the SMS with effect from 2002. And the intention of introducing this system was to assist the government and senior managers to fulfill the mandate of government. The PSC has been assessing the implementation of the PMDS in national and provincial departments, as I've mentioned. And the previous studies that were conducted was in the Eastern Cape, Northwest Province, Northern Cape, public administrations, and this report is in respect of Limpopo. And in the current financial year, the PSC is conducting the same research in the Western Cape. These studies found that the departments did not comply with the PMDS. And this is worrying because obviously if it's not done at a higher level, it means at lower levels, it's not going to be possible for senior managers to be able to really try and enforce or make the subordinates to comply. What we found in respect of the Limpopo province is as follows. An analysis of implementing the balanced scorecard approach was used, and this was introduced in the province in 2002. And the balanced scorecard focuses on four key performance perspectives, namely the customer perspective, the business process perspective, the financial perspective, and learning and growth perspective. And this is different from what has been proposed in the PMDS of DPSA, because the PMDS says there should be a key result areas. The performance contracting or agreements, the PMS requires SMS members to identify and formulate between 3 and 5 KRAs, key results areas for each of the four perspectives which I've mentioned. As a minimum, each SMS member in the province would therefore include no less than 12 key results areas in his or her performance agreement. The DPSA's performance management and development system advises that KRA should not exceed 5 or 6 substantive areas of performance. And obviously the key results areas, if you are using the PMDS approach of the DPSA, will be really from the work plan and the work plan of the institution itself. And this is to ensure that departments avoid the temptation to capture every responsibility and performance measure in the performance agreement, as this would make the tool unwieldy. The DPSA's PMDS indicates that each KRA must be assessed using the 80-20 weighting allocation. In respect of this, the KRAs are supposed to be 8 in total. In other words, if you have 6 KRAs, you have to weigh each one of them. It can be 20, 20, 10, 10, so that it can make 80 at the end. And in respect of CMCs, you can weigh them up until when they come to 20. By contrast, in respect of the Limpopo performance management system, it allows for flexibility in this area, in that overall weight of performance plan may be more or less 80%, and the weight of the core management competency will be the difference between what was allocated for the KPAs and what was out of 100. Performance appraisals, in respect of this area, the PSC found that the SMS PMDS makes provision for a duly appointed moderating committee to adjudicate on the performance of the SMS members. Whereas in Limpopo, we found that this provision was ignored. So one can imagine when it comes to disputes between the subordinate and the supervisor, if there is no mention of the moderating committee, that becomes a problem. The SMS PMDS requires that the total weight to be allocated to KRA should not exceed 100. However, the approach used by Limpopo provides for KRAs in each BSC perspective to carry a weight of 100. And if you look at this, because we have four of them, the total of KRAs becomes 400. We'll proceed with the findings. The overview of areas of compliance of PAs with the PMDS requirements, in respect of the identification of KRAs in the performance agreements, on average 66% of the performance agreements did not include the key results areas. It is also important to note that none of the performance agreements submitted by the Department of of Transport and DPW and Arts and Culture had KRAs. In other words, they just had a work plan which did not have KRAs. A non-reflection of Batopele principles. The PMDS of the DPSA indicates that for each KRA, we are supposed to reflect the Batopele principles against the KRAs and the CMCs. And what we found that the majority of PAs only stipulated that Batopele principles without any attempt to look, to link them to the KRAs. In other words, they were just mentioned on their own. Unless the Batopele principles are, are meaningfully integrated into the KRAs and CMEs, they will not add much value to the performance agreement as a management tool. And what the PSC found, again, in respect of the inclusion of the performance development plan, we found that on average, non-compliance with regards to the inclusion of PDPs in the PAs of senior managers in all departments was 160. And this is worrying because when you consider the fact that some of the SMS members do not have some skills in some areas, by not including the PDPs, it means that we are going to continue with people who are not going to have the opportunity to be trained or to get exposure in those areas where they are lacking. On dispute resolution, the study found that a total of 138 performance agreements did not reflect any mediators at all. And this is worrying because when you consider the fact that the Public Service Commission has found that the performance assessment-related grievances are the highest in the grievances that are dealt with by the Public Service Commission and also those that are dealt with by the department. Now, if you don't have a dispute resolution mechanism, that could also lead to a very uncomfortable situation. The performance agreements in terms of the PMDS of DPSA are supposed to be concluded by the 30th of April each and every year. And we found that the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture was the highest non-complier. There was no performance agreement by that date. And this was followed by the Department of Roads and Transport, which had 66% non-compliance, and the Department of Provincial Treasury at 57% non-compliance. The PAs that did not include the work plans, as I mentioned earlier, the highest was the Department of Economic Development and Environment and Tourism, which had 50%. Out of all this that we have found, the PSC made the following recommendations. Firstly, that the provincial government in Limpopo should take steps as a matter of agency to align itself with what has been provided for in Chapter 4 of the SMS handbook. That is the frame that is supposed to be used to draft or to draw a performance agreement. The second recommendation is that the training and development programs should be organized to ensure that the human resource representatives and SMS members are capacitated to better understand the system once it has been revised. And the third recommendation is that the senior managers should account for and take responsibility to enter into performance agreements. Obviously, once this is done, the subordinates will be able to follow, and that will be the basis for performance assessment to be concluded by the end of the financial year in question. Departments should ensure that the Batopele principles are meaningfully integrated with the KRAs and the CMCs of the performance agreements of all senior managers in the province. I think it would be impossible or even difficult to be able to say, I am actually carrying out what the Batopele principle requires of me, unless you have been able to capture it in your performance agreement, aligning it to each and every KRA and to each and every CMC. Departments should take urgent steps to ensure that the KRAs in the performance agreements of senior managers are aligned to strategic objectives as outlined in the strategic and operational plans of each and every department. And this obviously is because if you either want to rely on the basic scorecard, then it's going to be a problematic. Thank you, Chairperson. So, thank you very much for the presentation of the report. I will open up for any areas of clarity, questions, and issues that need to be reflected on by members. Anyone who wants to raise anything? Okay. Yeah. Sorry, we're proceeding with your finances first before.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. I'm going to do the last part. Hopefully I'm not going to bore you too much because you've actually forgotten about me. I'm going to do the overview on financial misconduct for the 2008-09 financial year. Since the 2001-02 financial year, the PSC has been monitoring financial misconduct reported to it by department, and on an annual basis produces oversight reports on financial misconduct in the public service. As the custodian of good governance, the PSC is mandated to promote, monitor the efficient economic and effective use of resources. The PSC is thus empowered to monitor and evaluate financial misconduct as determined in the PSMA, requisite treasury regulations. The intention of this overview is to provide a statistical overview and brief trends analysis of financial misconduct cases reported to the PSC by national and provincial departments for the 2008-09 financial year. In respect of the statistical overview, in the 2008-09 financial year, a total number of 1,204 cases of financial misconduct were reported. If you look at the graph on the right-hand side, you will see 78% of cases were reported by provinces and 22% of cases were reported from national departments. This trend is comparable with to the employee demographics of the public service, as provinces employ about 80% of public servants. The total number of cases of 1,204 is also a substantial increase from the previous financial year. In actual fact, an increase of 28%. As in 2007-08, we had 868 cases reported to the PSC. Then if you look at the types of financial misconduct, departments are required to report on the charges against officials, and we have categorized those charges into the categories reflected in the graph, and it shows that the category fraud comprises a significant portion, or 53%, of the overall number of cases reported. This trend is also in keeping with the previous financial years, where fraud was the highest portion of cases reported. And such cases typically involve social grant fraud, subsistence and travel fraud claims, capturing of fraudulent transactions, and petty cash fraud. Then if you look at the levels of employees, the figure indicates that financial misconduct prevails at all levels in the public service, and that the highest number of cases of financial misconduct are reported at salary levels 3 and 4. This is also in keeping with the employee demographics of the public service, because most of the employees are employed at that level. If you look at the figure, you will see from levels 13 to 16, there is a total of 40 cases. These are the levels at SMS level, and there has been a substantial increase in cases from 21 to 40 cases in the latest financial year. Then the outcome of the disciplinary cases, if you look at the graph, it shows that in the 2008-09 financial year, the highest number of employees, 86%, was found guilty following charges of financial misconduct, and this could suggest that the capacity in departments to deal with allegations of financial misconduct is improving. Then the sanctions improved. Imposed by chairpersons of disciplinary hearings following a finding of guilty. If you look at the graph, it shows that final written warnings were the most imposed against employees. The sanction of discharge from the public service has decreased from 47% in the 2002-03 financial year to 11% in the 2008-09 financial year, where final written warnings have increased from 10% in the 2-3 financial year to the most prevailing sanction of 36% in the last financial year. The last slide deals with the cost of financial misconduct, and in essence, in the 2019 financial year, the total cost of financial misconduct was around 100 million. The table reflects that at national level, the amount was 69 million. And if you look at the amount recovered, you must keep in mind that at the time that the report is made to the Public Service Commission on the cost of financial misconduct, departments have not necessarily started with recovery of the amount. And then on the far right-hand side of the table is a reflection of those cases where there was no loss to the state. In other words, when the misconduct was discovered, the department could, for instance, stop the payment of an S&T claim. So it will involve cases like that, and there's no loss to the state. In essence, there has... That's correct. If you look at the amount, the second column, that reflects the total amount. Of that amount, the second column was the amount recovered, and this also the third column of that amount is that where there was no loss. Can I continue? Okay. There's a substantial increase, 78%, in the cost of financial misconduct from the 2007-08 financial year to the 2008-09 financial year. But this could also be ascribed to the fact that there is a 28% increase in the number of cases reported to the PSC. I thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, can we request that she somewhat stays and do her part and finish it? Because I think it's a good question.
Yes, honorable members, those are the reports. The suggestion that we start immediately is the last one. And we are open for interaction. So, Michelle, would you want to start?
No, sir, I just. I'm also in. Interested in this page of the cost of financial misconduct.
You'll come to that point.
Yeah.
You want to start now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyone who's a member?
Okay. Thank you. No, I just like us to go back to this. I must say it's like 14, the financial, the table that we were just discussing now. If we just get better clarity in terms of how that table has been determined. Because we've got quite a few questions to ask. Because if you look at, you talk about the amount. How did you determine that amount? What type of research did you have to go into to determine that amount? And then, okay, that is now the amount recovered. But if there's an amount recovered different to the initial amount, how does it then not result in a loss to the state? If you take the example, I'm just looking at the example of three states.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
That is related to this for us to hear the critical question. Otherwise, we will give a chance to hear. Do you want this time?
Yeah.
From this last report?
Yeah. If this be a process of. Honorable defendant already requested clarity, I think she should do it. But if you want to add on requiring clarity, she can do so before she does. Can we allow her to hear that question and then we proceed?
Okay. For me, as a layman person, you know, a layman person, take the national department, 69 million, is that 69 million? Just want to clarify my mind. The amount recovered is less than a million. 845,000 now. It means there is 67 million that is not, that has not been recovered. Now, you talk of the number or the no loss to the state, 2 million. I want you to clarify me what happened to the other amounts, because there is a discourse to me of dysfunction. So that's why I'm saying, for a layman person to interpret where is the other money, what happened in your calculation, so that I can be clearer and ask more questions thereafter. Thank you for that. I'm trying to understand.
Thank you, Chairperson. In respect of the first question on how the amount is determined, in terms of the Treasury regulations, once a case is finalized, it has to be reported to the PSC. So, as I explained previously, at the time of reporting to the PSC, the recovery has not necessarily taken place because it involves, in some instances, a legal process or the recovery from a pension, so it would not necessarily be reported to the PSC. We have a database or a format where departments are required to report certain information to us. So on a specific case, they would be required to indicate to us what the amount in that specific charge of misconduct is. For instance, if it's theft, R1,000, it involves R1,000. The next step of reporting to us is, has the amount been recovered, yes or no, how much of the amount has been recovered, and if it has not been recovered, they need to give us an indication why not. They would, for instance, indicate that it would be recovered from the person's pension or that they are entering into an agreement regarding the repayment. So that's the process we follow. So if you look at the table, the first column, the amount column, reflects then the total of all those cases that they've reported to us. The second column dealing with the amount recovered will reflect what they have recovered at the time of reporting to the Public Service Commission. And as I said, the last one will then involve those cases where there has been an S&T claim, and before the payment of the fraudulent S&T claim was made, they have stopped the payment, but they proceeded with a disciplinary case against the person because there was still fraud.
Without a loss of a figure?
There wouldn't be a loss because it wasn't paid to the person.
It was stopped before payment.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to believe it might be a loss.
Yes.
Report by report, or are we going to deal with all of them?
I think we can go across. Like, what members were saying that, okay, this one is needed. I'm sure there was this confusion, but clearly it was like we still wanted to be. So, in the light, this is clear. I think it's kind of an open.
Okay, Madam Chair, if that's the case, we had a lot of reports, and obviously there's a lot of information for us to digest, but I'm not going to try and cover all of them, or we can ask questions about everything, but I'm going to focus on two, which to me stand out. That is the one on the financial misconduct, and the other one was on the human relations, management of human, those two reports I think are the most important in my view. On the financial misconduct, it's more comment, but I would like your comment on my comment. It's a trend that I notice. While we see that the number of fraud and other financial misconducts are rising and rising, it could be a better reporting. So it's not necessarily it's happening more, it's just reported better. So that could be a positive thing that people are caught. And so with that number is rising. But what is concerning to me is that then the people are found guilty as well, but then the sanctions imposed on page 39 here of the presentation. The most cases involved only get a final written warning, and discharge is a very severe penalty. But that's down to number four in the and a much smaller number. Now fraud and is a very serious crime. And corruption in civil service is so rife that we actually need to send out a very serious message to everybody that fraud will not be tolerated. And when you're found, you're discovered and you're found guilty, you will be punished very severely. That's the message we need to send out so that people will stop. You need to make a few examples and then the rest will stop. We'll start reconsidering very, very serious. So it's worrying to me that we all seem to be identifying the people. We even put them through disciplinary hearings and they're found guilty, but then there's just a little slap on the wrist will say, don't do it again. There's no strict discipline. So that is a problem, and I see that it's kind of a trend that's going in the wrong direction. So is my observation correct there, and do you want to comment on that? Then in terms of the state of human resource management, I mean, there are a number of indicators, you know, with signing performance agreements, it's a big one, and consistency of sanctions, I've actually touched on that. You've given us many indications, but what the overall impression that comes out of it, the civil service is not managed very well. On the contrary, it's actually managed very badly. So any government relies on its civil servants, the people you employ to actually do what you as a government want to deliver. Now, if your people that have to do the work, if they're not treated well, if you don't manage them properly, then you're not going to get a good service from them. So that is very worrying to me, that the staff, the workers, the employees on the civil service are not managed very well, that they're actually managed appallingly bad. And my question is, you referred to the strike somewhere, said that there should be proper investigation. Could this be an factor in the civil service strike that we've just had? What is your opinion?
Thanks, Honorable Van Stoutweg.
If you visit the police stations in Limpopo for a inspection, is it the PSC of Limpopo that conducts that investigation, or I just want to know that for clarity, and then say that after the report or after the investigation, any investigation has been done in 30 days. You report to the department, or you give the recommendations to the department, etc. Now, do you have any, or do you manage the implementation of those recommendations in a department, or don't you have any management over them? I know that the PSC doesn't really have teeth. Unfortunately not. But I just want to know that. And then there was something... Oh, yeah, just for interest's sake, during the Soccer World Cup, you said that there were interpreters within police stations to accommodate non-South Africans. I would like to know which languages mainly did they have to deal with, or were they interpreters for? Thank you. That's all for now.
Thanks, Honorable Sanskarty. Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the five presentations that were made by the presenters. And I think it does give us some idea of what is happening in the PSC, of which we comment. And I'm sure there is room for improvement to give in-depth input on the matters that they have raised. Chairperson, also the report on the first presentation in terms of going forward to 2010 preparations, I think they did a sterling work, hence little hiccups or challenges that we confronted, because with the meager resources that we have, but we managed to pull through. So in other words, we can convert that and present and make a strong case to Treasurer and the Executive to give more resources to those that are in real need to improve the image of government. That's what I've picked up in terms of your research. You are informing government what needs to be done. I'm impressed with that. The second issue, Chairperson, on the because in that first presentation, they spoke of the devolution to the lower levels. And my problem is the state of readiness or the capacity at that level. Whether do they have the capacity being trained to be ready to take those powers that they need to execute at that level. What because it's of no use devolving powers at that level and yet people are not ready. Or they are, because capacity can be interpreted in many ways, shortage of staff and so on. So I think you do have a great challenge there. And if you look into other reports in terms of the vacancy rates and to the capacity in terms of the skills that they have to do that, it is a challenge. I'm not sure whether is there a way of dealing with that. The other recommendation which you point out, Chairperson, which I've been clamoring for it anyway, you see, if you give a department a budget, it should break it down so that you can see where funds are going. You know, for instance, there's a program in each of the departments that talks of goods and services. You know, most of the funds, Deputy Minister, are couched under goods and services. But if you dissect that those goods and services, you'll find that really it leaves you with many questions than answers. So I think the approach that the PSC has picked up to say let us change the approach, I'm sure treasury regulations and so on, can give even members to see whether where the money goes rather than to couch it under one word and you don't see the funds. I think I can support in that one. On the second presentation, Chairperson, I'm not sure whether should we go to all these presentations. On the second presentation around the human resource, if I'm not mistaken, the concern for the inadequate on the organization development, I think you spoke about that, organization, the OD. I think it's on page 16, if I'm not mistaken. Just want to recap there. There's an issue that you raised. Under human resource. The overall implementation of the PMTS. You see, on this one, it relates also to our DGs and the HODs in the provinces. I am not sure whether if, because the AG also reflects on this matter, where he speaks of the management and the leadership, where departments are not adhering to. You'll find that in a particular province, the service level agreements were not signed, up to 40% of the departments. I'm not sure whether is what can be done to cause our senior managers to do their work, because there is a tool that empowers them, and one of that tool is the PFMA, of which certain clauses directs what the executing authority should do when it comes to those issues, but they're not doing it. And now I'm not sure whether it's a creative thinking from yourselves to assist that that process, because it gives the bad management and the output does not come very clear on that, because as the committee we are interested in the outcomes and outputs, but it does not come very clear. Instead it points out to the weaknesses of our managers, or the question of the Batopile principles are not adhered to because of various factors that we can talk about. And the other issue is this issue of the job hopping. You speak of job hopping. It's very rife within departments. I commit a mistake here, or it is alleged that I'm found guilty. And because I'm good, talking very smart English, in a particular department, education for argument's sake, I'm not saying education, but I will emerge in the economic affairs. And without any, and from there after 6 months, I go down, it's a vicious cycle, especially in provinces. now that you've identified that, and to say to encourage the hip hopping, is there no tighter regulation? I don't want to talk about law, that a person should rather stick, and if he or she is found guilty, she must serve that. I know in the previous there was no vetting. That's why people could just move. And in some instances, those who are sometimes found guilty got the job again in one way or another. And also this question of vetting takes so long to an extent that that culprit emerges elsewhere, very powerful, in a powerful position. I'm not sure whether you have some tools to assist the vetting process in that regard in relation to what you have raised. Chairperson, on presentation three, third presentation, it's repeated that on page 23, it's more of the FIFA, I think. But this issue of the coordination, senior managers play a critical role in securing approval and transfer of necessary funds. I think I did speak about that. I don't want to repeat myself. I'll jump quickly on the fourth presentation on the PMTS. I think a test case you were making of Limpopo, which is very good, but surely those findings that you discover from Limpopo tells you that all the nine provinces are in the same situation. So surely you need to move with little speed so that all these provinces are in line or are in par with Limpopo, with their weaknesses, and because they say prevention is better than cure. To deal with one province and then after some time to go another, it will take you some time. By the time you want to deal with all of them, the damage would have been very huge. Rather, your pilot or your test cases, Limpopo, should also be cut across all provinces, because your systems that governs us here are all the same as a unitary state with the elements of federal. But also I think the question of the palama, in as far as training and change the mindset, should come in here in this regard for our public service, so that they understand what is expected. My last point, Chairperson, I'm sorry to have taken so long. On the presentation on fire, page 35, I think for me, it would be what needs to be done, you know, to curb what we have discovered. And can we improve our finances, the financial ethics? Because you see this issue of fraud and corruption and so on. Yes, we use it sometimes very loosely, but also there are too much gray areas not to improve our situation. If there are certain laws that needs to be initiated to reduce that, we must say so. Because a person might get into the system, talk of the principles and so on, but still he is tempted to do whatever he does. So I'm saying, Chairperson, we need to improve. You must tell us where should we improve to avoid these huge figures in relation to what is happening on the ground. And the recovery, I would wish that our government can move with speed, because that relates to cases now. Yes, cases are there over a period of year, because this is the next financial year. And we are carrying this over as a rollover to the next financial year. We are moving with a little bit of a snail pace. If our also laws are very lax to an extent that, in fact, they are lax, because a person might commit a crime, or not necessarily crime, but it's easy to rush to CCMA, and sometimes department use the same legal people to defend themselves because they are saying they are entitled to do that. And you'll find that the state is losing most of these cases. Especially at the lower levels, I don't know at this level. But the point for me, the slow pace at which we recover these cases. Others goes back to 2007. Mm-hmm. Up to this point, we are still dealing with those cases. We need, instead, we've done this, and you dispel of this matter. If you speak of the 69 million here, and only less than a million has been recovered, what is the end product of it by when? So I'm saying it could take another 5 years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Honourable Began.
Chairperson, the reports are appreciated as you are all saying, but Chair, the reports are appreciated as indicated. But my problem is that we're becoming a scratch record. In the sense that I think the work of the Public Service Commission, having limited powers, doesn't really give us space where we see this reporting. For how long have you been there, for example, in the new dispensation? Things are becoming a routine here. You do the research work, it's greatly appreciated, and then we are to stop. You wait for your budget to circulate, and you start again. But in terms of the problems we're experiencing in the public service, if you look at even the report that's given on especially the performance management system that we have in place, I think we should come to a point where perhaps as a recommendation or as a suggestion, we see the report starting to bring out as to what is lacking in terms of us getting to a point of compliance. Because we need to make a move from where we are presently or where the problems are to a point where we can see that where there's been wasteful expenditure, where there's been fraud and everything else, there are disciplinary measures being taken, but also a future comparative study where you are able to go back and say, in 2007 we performed the same research, at least in 2009 there's an improvement to 10 or whatever, there is an improvement or there's no improvement. And these are the issues that are creating problems. Because in as much as we might have these questions, we're going to ask them these questions from the research point, but then what at the end of it? And then we'll just simply come back again, and we have another session where another area has been researched, and then what? So what I'm trying to say is, Chair, maybe we should also start as a committee moving from a point of just talking and asking and getting information to a point of getting into the legislative issues as to why the grey areas, why the non-compliance, and a lot of questions that I had, for instance, this morning here, are basically to DPSA. Because the problems that I experience on these reports is DPSA not keeping up for some reason or the other. And at this stage in time, we don't have anybody from DPSA except the Deputy Minister. And it would be an issue of saying, no, I can say the Deputy Minister is here, but it's more operational issues where we need the heads of departments. but it's issues where, what I'm trying to say is, we sit on this platform now, we've gone, what, 2 years down the line in the fourth parliament. Public Service Commission gives us these reports, and so what? We're going to all walk out of this door and it's a situation of, maybe it sounds silly, but it's a situation of thanks for the report, and that's all. It's time that you start acting on these reports. It's time that you see improvement, also for our own oversight role at the end of the day. So we as a committee, I think, should also become more assertive to a point that we actually make a decision as to what next based on the reports that we've been given. So I'm not even going to bother to go further and ask the questions that I was going to ask. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Okay, maybe let me just take all the questions, but I need to really raise that we definitely have a time constraint because there was a report that had to come. And if you look at the time, it's 15 minutes past 11. It therefore means that we're not going to do justice to this next report, and it's also a very critical report. And that's also to just emphasize that in this instance, it's Public Service Commission, which is an independent, institution supporting democracy, and ourselves as Parliament, you know. So of course we don't have the Public Service, we don't have the department as invited
to contribute. And I understand the frustration that the members are raising, but we needed to get their reports. And, you know, because in the what we believe we need to plan based on these outcomes in terms of the oversight that the report, the department has to do. I understand the frustration that Honorable Rebecca is raising, but we had to get the reports. We had to get this. But this is the Public Service Commission that we're talking to today, which is a Chapter 10 executing its mandate per the Constitution at this point in time. Then those who are remaining, unfortunately, you have to brief Honorable Mohali. I start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have the DPSA here. And Public Service, thank you for Public Service Commission, thank you for the report. But with the DPSA, Minister, I'm worried because, like, their financial misconduct report, we are having SMS members moving from 21 to 40. 7 and 8 was 21 financial misconduct cases to 40. What are we saying as the department? And also with regard to the substantial increase in what? The final written warnings have increased, but the sanction of discharge has decreased. The discharge from the public service has decreased. Public Service Commission, maybe you could also assist us there. What is the seriousness of these cases where the final written warnings have increased, but the sanction of discharge has decreased? And also with the performance management, all this lies with the department. What is the department doing to assist in this regard? Because really, there's nothing happening with the Limpopo report. There's nothing happening to measure the performance of the province. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Mohali. I am going to allow Public Service Commission to do a response, and I know, Deputy Minister, you are here. I will give you chance at the end to just, if you can be able to note all issues. Of course, we just highlight on issues that you believe that they need to an input. You are part of this meeting, and as a result, we are going to allow an input from you. But let me just allow the Public Service Commission at this point in time. I'm just going to take a few, like maybe maximum three or four, and then allow the team to take the other issues. The one that I thought I wanted to start with is the question around service delivery inspections, whether there is a public service commission in every province. Indeed, the public service commission has a presence in every province. You have five commissioners at national and then a commissioner in every province. And indeed, the inspections are commission-led in the sense that when the team goes out to do inspections, it is led by a commissioner. So that is the situation. In terms of managing implementation, what the commission does, what the office has introduced is a system of tracking implementation of recommendations. So that when a report is submitted to the department, to the executive authority and the head of department, the commission goes back to say, give us a report on the progress you are making with implementing the recommendations. That indeed we do. We can't say that implementation of PSC recommendations is at 100%. We've even moved to a point where we sanction, but summons departments to appear before the commission to indicate why they are not implementing some of the recommendations. And then the other one that about the language, the instrument was basically saying, do you have interpreters in place? It was not asking about specific languages. It was very generic in terms of just sensitizing police stations that they need to think about having interpreters. The other one that I thought I would want to pay attention to is the one about the fact that the number of cases has increased dramatically. Indeed, Honourable Member, the increase we attribute to the fact that systems are working. Because remember, what is reported are finalized cases. Departments are supposed to report finalized cases. Number one, at the level of systems, what this signals is that your systems are working, they're picking up the fraudsters. Number two, at the level of investigating cases to finality is also improving. If the number of cases that are reported is increasing, it means the level of finalizing cases by departments is improving. That's what it means. And it is a worrying trend, and the Commission has expressed this concern, that what you see in terms of sanctions seems to be showing that offenders get away with a slap on the wrist. You would be expecting that there are more people that are criminally charged, more people that are dismissed, but what you are seeing now is that while the systems are improving and cases are finalized, when it comes to sanctions, the trend is showing more and more leniency. So what we would strongly recommend is really decisive and strong heavy-handedness in meeting out sanctions to offenders. The other area is about or relates to the public service not being managed well. Could the strike be indicative of this? You know that the report is very specific about the HR practices. In terms of grievances, the Public Service Commission has issued reports, has released reports that show that departments are really not on top of their game in terms of handling grievances. And we can't rule out the possibility that aggrieved public servants will be at the forefront of labor relations activity. So in the handling of grievances, there has to be improvement. But we've also highlighted specific areas like lack of job descriptions, lack of job evaluations. You know, those things build up. The Commission is also still having on its work plan a project that seeks to find out how we can improve the bargaining processes in the country. So we cannot say with 100% certainty that what we have highlighted here is responsible for the strike. We have been very specific about the areas where there are weaknesses, but there may be bigger issues around the strike which will need to be investigated more intensely, and so that appropriate recommendations can be made. I just wanted to to catch my breath and allow the team to take over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister. I think just three comments to make, to agree with the Honourable Bigani that it is necessary to focus on specifically what is missing and whether there are improvements over time. In our studies on, if you look at the trends analysis on grievance handling that we produce, we indeed do that. You know, look at whether there are improvements in the management of grievance in the public service, in the implementation of our transversal public service M&E system, where we take a sample of departments every year, then based on the constitutional values and principles, we in that case also beginning to go back to departments that we've assessed previously. And if you look at the reports that we produced there, we also say in each report, we will say, well, which recommendations were made, for example, in 2006, were those recommendations implemented? And an interesting trend that is beginning to show is that where the recommendations were ignored, the performance becomes worse. And where the recommendations were implemented, the performance does improve. We can't say that we are doing this with all our studies. For example, with inspections, we haven't gone back to areas that we've inspected before, but certainly in some of our oversight activities, we're beginning to go back to areas that we've gone to before. There is a key issue around the accountability issues that the Honorable Suga was raising. At the end of the day, it's just holding people accountable for the implementation of what exists. The involvement of DPSA, and I'll give the example with the Limpopo study. We realized that when they used the balanced scorecard system, we were not really challenging the scorecard system itself, but we are saying that if you're using a scorecard system, it must at least be aligned in terms of the mandatory elements of the PMDS that DPSA has prescribed. So if you look at the issues that are raised in the findings, for example, where the PMDS framework says, the DPSA framework says, your key result areas contribute a total of 80% towards your total assessment. Even if you use a balanced scorecard system, you can't choose that my key result areas contribute 100%, which is what is happening in this system. And as I say, the argument therefore was not so much about whether to use the scorecard system, but whether the scorecard system is aligned with the mandatory elements of the PMDS. Now, when we came across this development, we asked them. We said, "But why are you not complying, Deputy Minister?" They said, "Well, we got approval from DPSA," and we said, "Well, show us that approval," and they couldn't give us the approval. So we wrote to DPSA and said, "We've come across something here, and we are told you have granted approval." And DPSA said, "No, we did not do that." So at the end of the day, I think it's at the level of the managers responsible in the province to say it's your responsibility to make sure that that these key principles are adhered to. If you look at other areas, human resource planning in the public service, DPSA says to departments, look, you have to do human resource planning. And the first step is they issue a template, a guide. This is something to guide you on how to do this. And then it still doesn't improve. The next thing says, well, you must submit your human resource plans to us, meaning DPSA. Why I'm raising the issue of accountability at the level of individual department is that we should be very cautious of the risk of malicious compliance. Because when you push centrally and say, submit this, still, I mean, the human resource plans that get submitted at the moment, I don't know if you should even call them human resource plans. But they have submitted, DPSA have submitted, they will submit. And DPSA said in your performance agreement include particularly principles, they are included. But do they mean anything? Hardly. So until we are able to push the level of accountability where it belongs, it's going to be difficult because DPSA will push and there will be malicious compliance. I saw recently, Deputy Minister, that on the issue of women in management in the public service, that DPSA issued a circular and said each head of department must have a workshop with women managers in their department to review the progress they have made, to identify the gaps, and come up with recommendations how they are going to improve the issue of gender mainstreaming in their own department. Which is a very positive development. But I have no doubt that somewhere, somehow, someone will find a way to comply maliciously with that requirement. So we have to find, to make sure that we place accountability where it belongs, which is at the level of the individual institutions themselves. Just as a general comment in terms of the issues that were raised. Thank you.
All right. It's real tight. Perhaps what we need to do is just to emphasize the point that part of the presentation of the report, not knowing if we'll be able to do justice to the coming one, it exposes the challenges that we are facing, the state that we're all dealing with. We're all doing this for the state, those investigations into the state, oversight into the state. So those are the challenges definitely that are facing the state and our roles as Public Service Commission and as Parliament in terms of closing in. It also shows the weaknesses and, you know, the loopholes that are there in terms of dealing with and systems are there, policies are there, but the police are there, but there are still things happening in the public service without, you know, a proper zooming in and closing up into those gaps. You know, of course, what we need to emphasize is our role of oversight in terms of spacing in into the existing gaps that are there. The only best thing is to say, when we have this report, like we emphasize that in our strategic planning this year, and when we started, why we picked up on Auditor General and Public Service Commission, because we believe these reports are the ones that can assist us to zoom into a proper oversight on the gaps that are already identified. To then start saying that Department of Public Service and Administration, if these are the things identified, how do you account, you know, how best, and then how then do we pull even the monitoring and evaluation in the precedence in terms of dealing with issues such as this one. So those are things that means that we have to gear up in terms of a sort of napping the ills that are happening in public service and in the public service as a whole. And therefore, it's appreciated the kind of work that the Public Service Commission is doing. The challenge is that how do we sort of improve the kind of work that the Public Service Commission is doing and make sure that we complement that work once it comes our way as Parliament. And also, government plays its role. Deputy Minister, I want to give you at the end to do an input. Who do you want to start with this one first?
I don't want to make an input comment, Chair, but rather to make some comments which I think would assist us in if not discussing these reports now, but at least setting a framework for the discussion whenever we wish to follow it. Firstly, I think that Comrade Chair and Chief Whip and members of the committee and the Deputy Chairperson of the Public Service and the DG and other members, I think we must welcome the reports very good. They do give us a detailed microscopic interrogation of several issues, and there are 7 reports that were presented. Now, all of them are important in their own rights, but they do raise a plethora of issues which we need to grapple with to improve the performance of the public service. But in all of them, we have to try and pick out the one that points the direction that we ought to be walking when we look at, because there are several things they raise. And I think that it's important that we recall Faith Pikane's comments. What are we doing here? Because this is the 4th Parliament, we get these reports, and it becomes like a scratch record, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, if I understand it, the Public Service Commission is an institution, a Chapter 10 institution, that is there to support democracy. And it's an institution that we crafted when we crafted the new democratic state in 1994, and we identified these institutions, gave them certain powers, independent powers, so that they will always be our guardian angels of the Constitution, and always point as to how the South African democracy is shaping itself as we go from face to face. Now, one of the most centrally critical role of the Public Service Commission is to ensure that the public service fulfills its mission and mandate in terms of the developmental states. Okay? So in that context, these reports are very important because they focus our attention on two very important things. The one is what is not going right in the public service, and what are the various things that we have to attend to. The other important thing that they focus our mind on is that the research tells us what is going right and how we are doing well. So there are two really classes of reports that we get, right? From what is not going well, there is a whole plethora of things that we have to address. And there I think you are quite correct in saying that the custodian of the public service, the responsibility of making sure that the public service works, lies in the DPSA. So it's the custodial responsible departments to ensure that the state functions in a performing way and that it delivers on the mission of meeting the aspirations of our people. So in relation to the responsibility, then the DPSA is primarily accountable for that, and it has to account to Parliament. The second thing is that the public service reports also tells us from time to time as to whether we have a public service which is meeting the mission and mandate that the developmental state requires. Okay? Now, there are several things in the way we crafted the developmental states that these reports reflect on. The first thing I think it talks to is whether we have a state which is sufficiently well organized to deliver on its mandates. Now, we've repeatedly said this, all of us, irrespective from whatever party you come from. We have all concurred on this one thing, and that is that over the so many years of democracy, we've evolved a set of policies that generally take us in the direction that we all agree on. There's national consensus on that one. We may have differences on here and there on how we should do things, but generally we are moving on the right track. And that we've also agreed that as far as performances are concerned, we can do better at implementation. And that our biggest fault line in the state lies in our inability to implement the policy instruction that our policies speak to. And in that respect, our inability as a state to ensure that we can guarantee the outcomes that we are spending money on. We allocate a national budget of so many billion, we disperse it on services, and we expect that those services must deliver results, and we are not getting the results because people are complaining. Now, the public service reports tend to interrogate that and tell us where we are going wrong as to why we are not getting the results that we want. That's the value of these reports. Now, what it's also saying to us is that one of the major issues that undermines the performance of the state that we are talking about is the way the state is structured. Right? And that is that we make decisions at a national level, we allocate money at the national level, and we make the policies around which that money must be spent. But the actual disbursements for the services are happening somewhere else. It's happening at the provincial and municipal levels. Right? So, for example, if I control the budget, and if I tell you how much you're going to spend, and then my responsibility is to give you the money to spend it, and if I have no way of guaranteeing that when you spend it, that you're going to give me the outcome I want, then something happens there at that level I can't control. Right? Because I've given you the money, I've told you this is how you must spend it, and the rest is yours. And then you now have your own discretion on how you actually spend it and what you do with it. So it illustrates that that's the sense of tension inside the democratic states that we're having to deal with, because we cannot guarantee the outcomes at the provincial and municipal level. So the key solution that we're looking for is how to coordinate the implementation across the three spheres of government within the tension of this three-level quasi-hybrid democratic state or central states that we have. That's our key problem. Right? And throughout these three levels, the machinery that we have at our command to do this is the public service. Okay? So what these reports show us is the problems and the plethora of problems that straddle this kind of structure of the state that we have. Number one, they're telling us that maybe our organizational restructuring in the state needs to be looked at carefully. And then how do we deal with this problem inside the state, which is why the Public Service Management Bill becomes such an important instrument going forward. The second one, and I'm going to cut short.
Please.
Just give me 5 minutes. The second one has to deal with how do we then get this coordination across the spheres? The human resource management framework across the public service. Okay? It's the structures, it's the human resource management across the public service, because that's the one, the people who man the public service are the ones who are the implementers. And if we can't get that right, we can't get the system right, because we depend. And there's so many problems you've identified. There's the problems of senior leadership, retention of skills, the assessment of capacities, the training. It's such an important one. What kind of training do we need? What kind of skills are shortage? Where do we locate that? Who's the agency, and you know, the role of Palama and all the other institutions come into that thing, and priorities for training. So that's important there. Now, if I want to just try, because of time shortage here, to focus on all these reports, what I was trying to give you is to give you a helicopter view.
Maybe just make one point. They still have a presentation to do. That's why I wanted to speak at the end. They're
okay.
Going to do a presentation on the section 195, and that's a valuable input that you're doing, but that's why I wanted you to do the closing.
Okay.
Let me just refer
to the one report which I think really brings all of that together. It's the report that you dealt with on the assessment of the effectiveness of the transport thing during the effectiveness of the public service leadership, that particular study. I really think that this is a very, very important study to the whole issues that we're talking about. And somehow, at some stage, we must pick that one up in relation to the questions I've raised and see how this becomes an instructive way forward as to how we build this debate on how we intervene in the public service. Because that one deals with the public service leadership across the spheres. It demonstrates how, on a focused issue, we were able to get the implementation protocols right. It demonstrates how there were funds available and how we were able to, as a state, get the machinery moving and execute something thoroughly and properly well. So there's a positive example there that we can learn, right, as to how we ought to be doing things to improve the performance of the state. I'll stop there.
Yeah, because also, Deputy Minister, on the issues we're raising, there will be a need for us to get a response at some point from the department on issues that are raised from within this report. I think those are the gist of the issues that you need to implement or look into. Can I then, I can't even allow a break. Do you really need a break? Okay, I think let's take a 5-minute break.
And then we continue with your last report in summary.
And the one of the loans which is at the DFSO, they are also going to make electronic presentation. Yeah, so it's just also made in the DFSO. And then from POPO, from the DTS, they must be ready. Right? And then the last one is this one from DTS organization. The one that they want.
No, I wasn't available. And they said, Togo knows about it. They said they were going to be getting the soft copies in those annexes. Just talk to him about it. Just talk to him. Where we need the
of the section 195 of the constitution that will be reflecting on the entities of the portfolio committee and public service commission and administrators. Okay. Well, at least it happens while we had a meeting when we were preparing for a BRRR report, whereby most entities were there, there is an idea, and therefore that this report will, you know, it comes where we have an idea at least. We have interacted with them. We are handing over to the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. The Public Service Commission has been requested to brief the committee on the implementation of Section 195 of the Constitution by the other entities reporting to us. These entities include the DPSA, SALAMA, and CETA. In order to assess the implementation of Section 195 of the Constitution, the PSC normally applies its transversal M&E system to a department, a process which usually takes a few months. The PSC applied its transversal M&E system that evaluates departments against a specific set of indicators and standards that assess the performance of departments against the 9 values in Section 195 of the Constitution in the DPSA in the 2007-08 research cycle. The system has not been applied in Palama, and CETA is established by the CETA Act and is governed by and controlled by a board of directors appointed by the MPSA after consultation with Cabinet. As it is a public entity, the PSC has not applied the M&E system to the CETA. The approach that we followed in this presentation is for each of the entities, the following indicators were used in respect of 3 financial years, 2007-08, 2008-09, and 2009-10. And the indicators are financial management, service delivery outputs, human resource management and labor relations, and ethics and anti-corruption. The National Treasury format for annual reports does not apply to the CETA, and some of the information available in the public service reports was therefore not readily available and is not reflected in this presentation. And an example of that is the HR oversight report that is normally at the end of an annual report of departments in the public service. Looking at the DPSA, as I said earlier, we have applied the transversal M&E system to the DPSA, and the following few slides relate to the application of the M&E system, and it also in some instances reflects some of the implementation of some of the recommendations. The DPSA performance and compliance with the 9 constitutional values and principles for the 2008-09-2007-08 cycle was 82%, which is excellent performance against several of the standards. If you look at the table on the left-hand side, is the principle in the constitution. The first one is professional ethics, and the DPSA obtained a score of 3.5. And the comment by the PEC was discipline takes on average 53 days, that's 2.75 months to finalise. And the standard that the PEC applies in this case is 20 to 80 days. So you will see it falls sort of in the middle of the standard that we apply. Training was also conducted on conflict management as a proactive step to reduce disputes in the department. In respect of the principle of efficiency, economy and effectiveness, the DPSA got a full score of 5. And the comment of the PEC was that the prescribed transversal national data management systems such as BAS, PASHAL, and LOGIS was used to generate information to monitor and evaluate the performance of its operations and projects. The DPSA was advised to provide the reasons for non-achievement of outputs, and this was addressed in its 2006-07 annual report. In respect of the principle of development-orientated public service, the DPSA got a full score of 5, and the PC commented that although the research, learning, and knowledge management component reports on and shares lessons learned, a specific system should be put in place to consciously identify lessons learned and how to apply these to future poverty reduction projects. On the issue of impartiality and fairness, the DPSA got a score of 4. And the PC noted that the checklist and manual were in place to ensure that decisions are taken in compliance with the principles of administrative justice. In respect of the public participation and policy making, the DPSA again got a full score of 5, and the comment was it did not have a policy or guideline on policy stakeholder participation in policy making. And then on accountability, they got a score of 4.5. They got an unqualified audit, and the PSC noted that 57% of the strategies in the fraud prevention plan has been adopted. In respect of transparency, the DPSI got a score of 5. The annual report was clearly presented in narrative and pictorial form, following a recommendation that the department should include a column that indicates actual performance. This was subsequently included in the 7-8 annual report. In respect of good HR and career development, DPSI got a score of 3, and the average time taken to fill a vacant post was 259 days or 9 months. This was later, when we followed up on the recommendations, improved to between 4 and 5 months or 82 days. Then lastly, if we look at representativity, the DPSI got a score of 2. In respect of women at SMS level, they had attained 44.5% of the target, which is 50%. Blacks only 63.9% instead of 75%, and people with disabilities 0.67% instead of 2%. That is in respect of the findings of the Commission on the application of the M&E system. If we look at financial management in the DPSA and we look at the table there, you will see the red bars reflect spending outside the margin of 2% in the DPSA, and that has been in the first three columns dealing with the figures in respect of all 3 years. The last column deals with the spending in this financial year, and the information is in respect of the whole of Vote 11. In other words, it includes Palama and PSC. But the spending is above the benchmark of 41.67%. If you see there, it is at 47.1%. The DPSI obtained unqualified audits in all 3 years that we looked at, and there were no recurring issues emanating for the audits identified.
Sorry, the member is asking that you repeat a bit of what you've just said now again.
Okay. If we look at the appropriation statement of the DPSA, there's a column for 2007-8, 8-9, and 9-10. And there's an expenditure as a percentage of the final appropriation. That spending must be within a margin of 2%. And if you look at the figures there, the first year is 96.4%, so it's below the 2%. The same in 2008-9 and the same in 19. In respect of 10-11, there's a benchmark spending as at the end of August, and that is 41.67%, and the spending was above the benchmark at 47.1%. Then, as I indicated earlier, the DPSA obtained unqualified audit opinions for the last 3 financial years, and there were also no recurring issues emanating from the audit. In the 2019 financial year, the DPSA incurred irregular expenditure to the amount of 4.5 million rand. The AG noted that in the 2019 financial year, the accounting officer did not provide Parliament with a strategic plan at least 10 days prior to the discussion, and the strategic plan does not include indicators for the department's program. If we look at performance information, the Auditor General indicated that the DPSA has not reported on all the predetermined objectives. The plan and reported performance targets were not specific, measurable, and time-bound, and changes to the objectives from the approved strategic plan for the year under review were not disclosed and explained. And some of the planned and reported indicators were not verifiable, as it was not possible to adequately validate the processes and systems that produce the indicator. The PSC also did an assessment of the performance information in the latest annual report, and we found that there's a confusion between the output indicator and target columns, in the sense that all 3 columns give additional description of the output, and we've provided an example on that slide. If you look at the output in the first one, the output was changed to development of guidelines for child care facilities. And if you go to the second column, performance measure, It says consultation with stakeholders, draft guidelines, not policy. And the target is consultation with stakeholders on draft guidelines. So they're very similar. And the second example proves the same issue, that there's some confusion. Then if we go ahead with the performance information, the actual performance column in some of the instances describes completed activities that will lead to the production of the output, and it's not possible to determine whether the output was achieved. If you look at the last column of that example that we have provided to you, you will see that they have a long description of actually what happened, what was done in the department, but the target was department supported to implement policies, EHW in Durban. And on the in the actual, there's no real reflection whether that target was met. Then on the next one, it is in some instances not possible to establish whether the output has been achieved. If you look at that example, the output was pillar specific health, education, and promotion programs. And the actual draft report completed on public service guidelines on smoking cessation. So it doesn't really address the output, and we do not know whether the target was actually met. And then the reasons for non-achievement were not reflected, and the example shows that the target should have was development of an IFMS module. The actual was the development of the HRD module was has gone off well. The outstanding work will be finalized during the next quarter, but they don't indicate why it was not, they don't indicate the reason for the variance, why it was not attained. Then looking at human resource management in the DPSA, that table reflects that as at 31 March of each year, the vacancy rate from March 2008 has improved from 21.7% to 17.8% in the last financial year ending March 2010. And analysis of that has shown that the vacancy rate is the highest at SMS level, and that is 23.6% or 29 posts, and that the majority of these posts were in the information technology related field. If we look at employment equity in the DPSA, over a period of 3 years, there has been an improvement. The fact that is indicated in red shows that they're all still below the target set for employment equity in respect of black people. And March, as at 31 March 2010, it was 89%, so they're always, almost there. Women at SMS level is 40.4%. And in respect of people with disabilities, the annual report for 2019 did not indicate the compliance with the target. Then if we look at the submissions of the performance agreement of the DG of the DPSA as well as the evaluation, this table reflects that in 2007-08, the DG of the DPSA did submit a performance agreement, but the DG was not evaluated. And the reason was that an evaluation meeting could not be held, but the documents were submitted to the PSC. In 2008-09, we did receive a performance agreement from the DG of the DPSA. The DG was not evaluated. Evaluation documents were never submitted to the PSC, and the DG has since been moved to another department. In respect of the 2019 financial year, the DSC has received a performance agreement. Then in the 2006-07 financial year, the AG noted that the DPSA had not updated its human resource plan for the year ended 31 March 2009. The HR plan has subsequently been revised and approved on 30 March 2010. In respect of labor relations management within the DPSA, the first table dealing with discipline shows that there's been an improvement in the fact that there has been less disciplinary cases or hearings in the department. The number of people suspended has gone down from 3 in 2008-9, 7-8 to 1 in 8-9 and 1 in 9-10. The average number of days suspended has actually increased, and you will see on the left-hand side, we have reflected that the disciplinary code and procedure for the public service is that you must hold a hearing within 60 days when a person is suspended. And so the time period or the number of days people are suspended is actually above that 60 days. Then the last line in that table reflects the cost of suspensions as indicated in the annual report, and you will notice that in 2008-09, the cost of the suspension of that one person was not indicated. In respect of grievances in the DPSA, the table reflects that in 2007-08 there were 5 grievances lodged, 8-9, 14, and 19-12 grievances. The second line reflects the number of grievances referred to the Public Service Commission by employees in the department, and there were 2 in 2008-09 and 4 in 19. The nature of these grievances relate to unfit treatment, salary problems, filling of posts, and performance assessment. Then, in respect of ethics and anti-corruption in the DPSA, the first table reflects the financial disclosure forms as at 30 April of each year, and it reflects that in the first 2 years, 7-8 and 8-9, the compliance with the financial disclosure framework was 100%, but in the past financial year, 19, the compliance rate was 91%. In respect of National Anti-Corruption Hotline cases, the second table, it reflects that a total of 3 cases were reported to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, and that the PC has received feedback in respect of 1 case and 1 case, and that case was closed. So we are still awaiting feedback in respect of 2 cases. Those cases relate to procurement irregularities and maladministration. Then in respect of financial misconduct cases reported to the PSC, in the 2007-08 financial year, 3 cases were reported to the PSC, 8-9, 5 cases, and in the last year, no cases were reported to the PSC. The nature of those cases involved in 2007-08 financial misconduct, financial mismanagement, and 8-9, it related to the capturing and authorization of unapproved salary advices. And if we look at PANAMA, PANAMA has an appropriation statement and a trading account. So the first slide will deal with the appropriation statement of PANAMA. If you look at the table in 2007-08, you will notice that the expenditure was 100%. In 8-9, it was 99.8%, so it was in the margin of the 2%. In 9-10, it was again 100%. And the last column of the table again reflects the same information as in respect of the DPSA, because it's one vote, it's for vote 11. And the information is the same, that the spending is above the benchmark for as at the end of August 2010. The PALAMA has obtained unqualified audit opinions in the past 3 financial years, and no recurring issues emanating from these audits were identified. In respect of the 19 financial year, the AG found that the strategic plan of PALAMA did not include measurable objectives, expected outcomes, program outputs, indicators or measures for all the objectives. This table now deals with the trading account of PALAMA, which is separately audited by the Auditor General, and you will see that in respect of the last 2 financial years, in other words, 2008-09 and 19, there was a deficit from operation, but the PALAMA trading account obtained unqualified audit opinions in respect of the last 3 financial years, and there were no recurring issues emanating from the audits identified by the AG. Then if we look at the performance information in the Paloma report for 2019, the Auditor General indicated that for the selected objectives, 31% of the planned and reported targets were not specific in clearly identifying the nature of, and the required level of performance, and were not measurable in identifying the required performance. In addition, the AG reported that the internal policies and procedures of Panama do not adequately address the process pertaining to the planning and monitoring of predetermined objectives at the overall performance level. The PSC has looked at the performance information and found that 29 out of the 57 outputs were fully achieved, which constitutes 51% achievement of service delivery outputs. A further 25 or 44% of outputs were partially achieved. The reasons reflected in the Paloma annual report for non-achievement or variances include service providers could not confirm their availability for dates set, lack of participation by key external stakeholders, and delay in donor funding and financial constraints. Looking at human resource management in Paloma, the first table reflects the vacancy rate, and it reflects a vast improvement between the year ending 31 March 2009 and the year ending 31 March 2010, in that the vacancy rate has gone down from 45.1% to 29%. In both 2008 and 2009 financial years, the vacancy rate was the highest at salary level 6 to 8, 61.8% and 39% respectively. Looking at employment equity, you will see that Paloma has not attained any of the targets set over the three financial years. In respect of the year ending 31 March 2010, you will see that in respect of black people, the target is 90 and they have attained 79.7%. In respect of women at SMS level, where the target is 50%, they're at 46.5%. And in respect of people with disabilities, where the target is 2%, they have attained 1.7%. Again, if we look at the human resource management and specifically the performance agreement and evaluation of the HOD, in the 7-8 financial year, the DG did submit a performance agreement. The DG was not evaluated. The evaluation documents were received incomplete, without a valid verification statement. In respect of the 8-9 financial year, the PSC did receive a performance agreement. The DG was not evaluated. The evaluation documents were never submitted to the PSC, and the DG has since left the public service. In respect of the 9-10 financial year, there was an acting DG, so we had not received a performance agreement. Looking at labor relations in Paloma, the first table reflects information on disciplinary hearings or the management of discipline. It shows that in 2007-8 there were three disciplinary hearings, and since then, in 2008 nothing. No information was reflected in the 19th annual report. In 2007-8, one person was suspended. They did not indicate the number of days of the suspension, and neither did they indicate the cost. Looking at grievances, there has been a substantial increase in the number of grievances lodged in Paloma. You will see that from 2007-8 there was nothing, in 2008-9 there was one case, and in 9-10, 12 cases. Cases referred to the PSC in 7-8 and 8-9, one case was referred to the PSC. The majority of grievances relate to performance assessment and salary problems. Looking at ethics and anti-corruption and the financial disclosure forms as of 30 April, you will see that in 2007-8 the compliance was 100%. That has gone down substantially. In 8-9 it's 95%, and 9-10 74%. the National Anti-Corruption Hotline cases, only one case was referred to was lodged with the National Anti-Corruption Hotline in 2007-08. That case was investigated and the case has been closed, and it related to appointment irregularities and fraud, and the case and the allegations were unfounded. No finalized financial misconduct cases were reported to the PSC during the past three financial years. Looking at CICA, the top table just reflects the financial performance of the CICA, and it looks different than the other two because they report differently. But in essence, in the past three financial years, the CICA had obtained unqualified audit opinions. In all three financial years, the Auditor General noted that a contract management system that facilitates a fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective procurement and provisioning system was not in place. In the 19 financial year, irregular expenditure to the amount of 214 million was incurred as a proper procurement and provisioning process was not followed. And then lastly, the strategic plan and budget for the 2010-11 financial year has not been approved by the executive authority of the CICA within the prescribed period. In regard to non-adherence to legislation, the Auditor General found that in some instances, service level agreements were not signed or concluded. The invitation to tender occurred without an approved business case. The business cases did not include a budget for the required goods and services. A procurement schedule for the execution of a request for a bid was not submitted for approval to the designated official at the government department. Bid responses were received after the approved bid closing date and were evaluated. The declaration of interest form was not completed and signed at meetings. The information used in the evaluation reports did not agree to bid responses submitted by the bidder, and quotations were requested from suppliers who were not on the list of preferred suppliers. The Auditor General indicated that for the selected objectives, 44% of the planned and reported measures were not clear, with an unambiguous definition to allow for data to be collected consistently, and 22% of the planned and reported targets were not specific in nature and measurable in identifying the required performance. We have found that 13 of the 22 outputs were fully achieved, which constitutes 59% achievement of the service delivery output. The reasons for non-achievement indicated in the performance information are a decrease in spending by customers, and the CICA tariffs were not increased. Challenges with regard to debt collection from clients and high leadership turnover and the impact thereof on staff morale. Looking at human resource management within the CICA, it should be noted that the targets indicated here are targets that they have identified, and it's not similar than those in the public service. In respect of black people, they had a target of 62%. And they had attained that target in the year ending 31 March 2009 and the year ending 31 March 2010. In respect of women, they have set a target of 46% and they attained that in the year ending 31 March 2010. And with respect to people with disabilities, they have set a target of 1%. And they attained that in the last two financial years. In the year ending 31 March 2008, they did not reflect that information. The annual report also indicates that the turnover on critical skills and best performers was 1.78% as compared to the target of 7%, and that 22% of the training budget was spent on leadership and development. Looking at ethics and anti-corruption, the AG has noted several issues in the 2019 financial year. And this is just a summary. The Special Investigation Unit is investigating four cases relating to procurement irregularity. As of 31 March 2010, internal audit had completed 15 investigations. These investigations related to irregularities within the procurement process, human resource matters and contract and invoicing disputes. In addition, one case was handed to the Commercial Crime Unit of the SAP. And the AG also noted that as at 31 March 2010, there were 20 cases under investigation by the Internal Audit Unit of the CITA, and that these investigations related to procurement irregularities, conflicts of interest, irregularities in the HR and payroll department. Lastly, if we look at information from the PSC, you will see that 5 cases of have been reported to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, and that we have not received feedback in respect of any of those cases. They related to procurement irregularities, nepotism, and fruitless expenditure. In conclusion, this presentation has highlighted areas that impact on the performance of the DPSA, Paloma, and CITA in respect of key issues over a period of 3 years. The PSC trusts that the information highlighted in this presentation addresses the Portfolio Committee's request to be briefed on the implementation of Section 195 of the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Public Service Commission. You know, documents when I send is different from when they're presented and we start to talk about them, because these reports do come and they come in pairs. It does provide an opportunity to go through quite deeply and start thinking, you know, about the challenges facing you. Members, I think the report has been presented. Any matters to raise? Questions, areas of clarity? Any comments? Okay. In the light that there are no comments, we want to thank the Public Service Commission, actually, for coming to do the presentation. I know that the reports that you actually required were too many, but you managed to sort of scale them down and were able to present to us, so that we're able to know the work that we have done, the scope that we've covered, and where we are. Of course, this provides a lot of food for thought, particularly for members, and our interaction with the department. And at the same time, we want to really appreciate that the Deputy Minister did make time to be part of the Portfolio Committee, because what will be happening is that we will also be, you know, sharing this information with the department. It will be required from the side of the portfolio, of the portfolio committee, to really get some responses. Because once we have these reports, they have been presented in Parliament. We therefore need to find some answers from the side of the department. And hopefully the department starts from today to engage on the issues that the Public Service Commission has raised. We would require the department to also come before us to actually answer on the issues that have been raised. Honourable Fanskelvik.
When will the latest State of the Public Service report be made available?
Okay. All right. Honourable Rukani.
Chair, I'd like to make a request to the researcher that what are the possibilities of us getting not necessarily a comparative analysis, but with the BRRR, based on what we've been given now, with the last presentation from the Public Service Commission, but a consolidated report to get an indication of what are our possibilities of having a look at, in terms of recommendations, especially of where we can perhaps sort of point out, or where they can pick up areas of concern or areas that you can perhaps re-look into as a committee for possible improvement in relation to the Public Service Commission itself, the CITA, DPSA, Palama, and Palama. I think the two reports, if you have a look at them, if we had the time, you'd see that there is a correlation of information where we can actually start picking out exactly what we need to attend to in terms of our oversight work going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Public Service Commission?
I'll take the easy one. The Public Service Commission is going to be releasing the statement of the Public Service Report tomorrow. I did say I'll take the easy one.
sorry, that it will be sent in Parliament tomorrow morning.
Yeah. It will be tabled in Parliament, and there will be a media briefing as well, and then it will be followed by a round table with stakeholders, which will be on the 4th of November. But Deputy Chair, the other one about consolidation, I thought the Honourable Bigani was talking about internal. Yes.
Or was it directed to parliamentary research?
No, our research.
Yeah, okay. In the light of this Public Service Commission, I'm sure with us we have reached the end of what we requested you to do, which we have done thoroughly, and we really appreciate, and we want to believe that you will actually engage further on issues of this nature. We will come together again to develop a plan of action, the challenge that is facing us in the public service. Therefore, I will release you. Public Service Commission, you are invited for lunch. You therefore will have to go to Old Assembly, but we are proceeding with the committee. The committee is proceeding with the last part. That was the first item which Honourable Dreyer requested that we take it to the last. I therefore will request you to then move forward for me to and the Deputy Minister at the they will actually guide you. They will tell you where to go. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's just a presentation of the report. No, we cannot adopt it if, yes, we cannot, otherwise we won't form a quorum. It means we can't continue the meeting. So it's only just for the, we have presented the report as it has been drafted to the members, and we were presenting it for adoption. Is there a mover for adoption of the report?
I want to move for the adoption
of the report.
Of the report.
With amendments.
With amendments, because I did read it twice, even now. I move for that, Chairperson.
And then any seconder?
There is a problem with the report, but just for the first place, wrong at the bottom, make it for
Or
skulk, huh?
Except this time. Okay. No, that's any second to the report with amendments, particularly to the same name as Dr. Chair, please. Okay, second that. Okay. Anyway, through we can adjourn the committee. Thank you very much. Okay, we just need to indicate that there will be interaction from the research side in terms of anti-corruption as requested by the committee. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I know that we withdrew the type of report, especially you have produced whether it was initially we thought we'll have the specific outcomes of the department. But you know, looking at the time and what the Public Service Commission had to raise, it was quite a lot. And therefore we closed the space for the department because we wanted to get all the reports. But now the reports are here and I'm sure what we then need to do from the side of the department to interact with them and come and give a feedback in this area. Now, what's in the public service committee was uncomfortable to do a joint presentation where there is also a department, and which is correct, of course, as an independent agency, because that's what I'm trying to do. We therefore try and look for space. It's really tight for now. Look for space where we can have a response from the department in terms of the report that has been particularly in areas, because most areas that we've been with affect the department.
What is the pleasure of the chair? What is the pleasure of the chair? Do you wish that these reports be referred to the respective entities and that they should provide a response to them?
Honourable Chairperson and members, I already have some briefs from the other researchers, including mine, but I just wanted to wait for all of them to come in. But the deadline for them, for the others, is Friday. So by Friday, we'll be able to dispatch them to the pigeonholes.
Okay. And what Louis is talking about, we are getting all the areas that are reflected by other committees in terms of areas of corruption. We are collating them as this committee, and part of it, that's what is going to come our way, to just indicate what were the highlights in various committees. Well, you know, we deal with corruption at various levels, so we're bringing it together and want to evaluate and inspect it, you know, quite jointly. And thank you for that, Mluis. Then we'll have that brief meeting later.
Yeah, I think it should be true.